friendships never go out of style.
Oh, you're the best friend anybody's ever had. And it's funny, but I feel as if I've known you all this time, but I couldn't have, could I?
If you're not over here in 15 minutes, you can find a new best friend.
Welcome to the Best Friends Playbook Podcast.
With your hosts, Crystal
and Allie.
We've known each other for over 27 years, and we're here to share our wisdom on friendships in film, TV, and literature.
Grab some coffee, our favorite, and get cozy.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to my best friend's playbook. Allie here, but this is not the start of season three. This is one of our two Halloween special episodes, and if you follow us on Instagram, you know that Crystal does not do spooky movies of any kind, and Allie is obsessed with spooky movies. So, Crystal said, I don't want to do them, but you're more than welcome to do them. Thus, we have a guest today. We have a guest host for the two spooky episodes we are doing, and that guest is
Hannah Lambert from Between Lewis and Lovecraft.
If you guys have been listening to us for a while, you know that at the top of season two, we did a collab with your podcast, Hannah. We did The Handmaid's Tale, which was super fun. Very long episode. Sorry, guys.
I mean, anytime you put Tyler and me in an episode, it's going to go over. It's how it works.
Yeah, and there was four of us, so I think it was just like all the things needed to be said.
Yes.
Especially with The Handmaid's Tale. For this episode, we are going to be doing the newest adaption of It, Chapter 1 and Chapter 2. And for the second episode of the Halloween special, we'll be doing all four seasons of Stranger Things. It's three. They're coming out with four.
I was like, I missed season four's release.
No, I forgot. They just started filming it again.
She's so happy.
All right, so we're doing It, Chapter 1. We're going to start with that first. We'll just go with them in order. These kids are amazing. I love
them. These kids are amazing. I find it funny that Crystal is like afraid of It and Stranger Things, because even though It is scary and like has gore and stuff a little bit, I always think of these 80s horror movies as more of like adventure flicks. I'm like, oh my gosh, just a bunch of kids riding their bikes around, fighting monsters, having a grand old time. Like,
yeah, it definitely has that vibe, especially like if, you know, we think about Goonies or something. Like the Goonies isn't scary, but it is kids trying to defeat something that adults should be doing, not kids. And so that's why I'm also glad that we're doing like It and Stranger Things, because it's kind of that whole thing again where in the 80s, kids have to solve like all the big life problems.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, don't they now too?
Exactly. Yeah. Crystal also like just zombies, blood, guts. I mean, and then the fact that It himself turns into a spider like several times.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, we talked about that in the Tolkien thing for Correspondence, I think, how she hates spiders.
Mm-hmm. As do I. But I'm able to, like, some I have to close my eyes for, but I can, like, at least get through it. But I just also love horror and being scared.
Exactly.
It's the kid who's the hypochondriac. He's my favorite.
Oh, Eddie.
Eddie, that's his name.
He's my favorite, too. That line where after the girl tells him that his pills are all placebos, and he's like, these are gazebos.
Gazebos, I know. He's so great. The movie starts out with, we have Richie, Ben. Oh, wait, no, Ben comes in later. We have Richie, Bill, Eddie, and Stanley. Those are like the four original friends.
Yeah, they're the main losers club, the OG losers club.
Yeah, and I really like that the way that Mike and Ben come in to the group is because they're being bullied. And so I like that these four boys are ready. It would be smarter for them to maybe not attract the bully by bringing in someone else the bully's bullying. But they're like, oh, no, he's always after us. So it doesn't really matter at this point.
Right. They're already on his list. So what's a couple more losers?
Exactly. Yeah. So I just think it's like, I already feel like those four boys already have such a good heart, and they're such good friends to each other already that they want to look after these other two boys that are being bullied.
Even though they're all like pretty different, like Bill and Stanley are definitely like quieter, more polite. I think Bill's obviously very like still depressed and anxious and feels guilty for his brother's death the year before. But I feel like him and Stanley are just the more mellow ones of the group anyway. And then you've got Eddie and Richie who are just like over the top. Richie's always like swearing and making inappropriate jokes, and Eddie's freaking out about everything because his mom has convinced him he's in danger all the time.
Yeah, I just love how those two are like always bickering at each other and always being mean to each other.
So mean. I'm like, these kids are savage.
Yeah, but they like, they don't ever take anything personal. They always get over it really quick. Yeah, I definitely feel like they have a really good friend group. And this is something Crystal and I have talked about in friendships, where like if you have more than two friends, it sometimes feels like they sort of split off into who's closer to each other. But with this group, I feel like they're all equally close. I would say maybe Eddie and Richie are like a bit more closer, but otherwise I feel like they're all pretty equal.
Right. I don't see like there being a natural pair for Bill or Stanley necessarily. Mm-hmm. And then once you add the other friends in there too, it gets even more, it turns into an even bigger group.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought that was really interesting and kind of cool.
I think it is interesting though, that the two that you picked out as being closest, which I totally agree, Richie and Eddie, I feel like it doesn't normally work that way in real life, where the two like most extroverted and like loudest, biggest personalities, I don't think they normally end up being like the closest friends, because you kind of need the balance, the person who's doing more listening than talking.
Exactly. But I wonder if that has to do with, this is revealed in the second movie, but I don't think it really matters, is we find out that Richie is gay and that he's always had a crush on Eddie.
Right. So I think that's probably the likely explanation for that pairing, even though I don't know that Richie's like fully aware of it in the first chapter, and Eddie's almost certainly not.
Yeah.
But yeah, that seems like the only plausible explanation for why the two loudest people are the best friends.
Yeah.
It doesn't help that Eddie has the like most heated reactions too when he's getting picked on.
Oh my God, he gets so upset. He's always cursing at him. He's like, "You shut the fuck up." He's always so mad at him. And then Beverly, I feel like she gets initiated because of like the love triangle. She's obviously not attracted to Ben, but she has like some sort of connection to him, like emotionally.
Yeah, I think she was the first one, or he was the first one that she talked to, right? Because she kind of like saw a fellow loner / bullying victim in him, and she signed his yearbook and made him fall in love with her, basically.
Yeah, she was so nice to him. It was so sweet. And then obviously when the boys run into her in like the pharmacy because they need to get the supplies. And I love how Eddie's like, "I know what to get. I know how to fix him from bleeding out from the bully like carving into his stomach. He like knows exactly what's needed.
He's been trained his whole life for this moment."
Literally for that moment. But then, yeah, Bill runs into her like in the alley and he's like all love struck. And I love that he doesn't believe the rumors about her either.
Right. Especially for like young kids. I feel like that's very mature.
Yeah.
I think they're like 13. And at that age, it's so easy to get caught up in the rumor mill and stuff and being like, "Oh my gosh, did you hear this about Beverly?" But none of the boys are like that.
Yeah. And it's also like super upsetting because I don't actually feel like those rumors are far-fetched, because like when I was in elementary, like 6th grade, so 12 years old, there were already like sex rumors going around. And I'm just like, we're 12. Like, why are kids already doing this sort of thing? And I know like it's bound to happen. It just, it breaks my heart.
Right.
You're still supposed to be young and innocent. Exactly. You're still supposed to be like young and innocent and, you know, excited more about like your first kiss or going to your first dance, rather than like poor Beverly. She's called like a whore, like right out the door.
And gets wet trash dumped on her. Like, oh.
Oh God, so bad.
Obviously the other losers have their issues with Henry Bowers and his gang too. But I feel like in the first movie, Beverly, Ben, and Mike are the ones who really deal with like the most bullying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially for Mike. Obviously, the biggest thing is like bully. What's his name?
Henry.
Henry. That's right. You just said it. Henry Bowers. He's obviously like a racist piece of shit. So he just is already being terrible to Mike for no reason. And then I think it was alluded in the movie, but were his parents actual, like, were they actually making meth and that's why the apartment caught on fire?
I thought it was arson for some reason, but like his parents were drug addicts. Mm-hmm. So that's the way like it got framed
in
the newspapers and stuff. But I thought there was some sort of mention of some racist people setting the apartment or the house on fire.
Oh yeah, because Henry says that he wishes that he could have done it.
Yes.
So I guess like maybe that's, I mean, I didn't read Stephen King's book. I'm not sure how much they adapted from Mike's storyline, but either way, like, I feel like the writers were just trying to show like how bad it was back then. And just kind of like, either way, like Mike just still got screwed in the situation. Cause then he also feels like it's his fault, which I think is that just maybe he was trapped in a room that wasn't caught on fire and he was too scared to try and save them, maybe.
Right.
That's all I can think.
Cause when he has his first run in with it, he has that vision of the people trying to get out of the the room and he can't, or is too afraid to open the door.
But that's another thing, is that like they find out that he's being bullied down by the, it's like, it's not the boroughs. Yeah, it's like the, yeah, the barons.
Oh, the barons?
Barons, that's what it's called. I was like, boroughs, barons? And they don't even hesitate to help him. And obviously like racism is still really high right now, but especially for being like in a small town, they don't even think about it with him. Like they just don't care. And so like, I really love that they're super lovable. I think Richie's the only one that points out Ben's fat, because that's just Richie. He just, this is really obnoxious. I'm glad he didn't point out anything to Mike about his race. So he behaved there. But otherwise, like the boys, they don't make fun of people for that stuff. They like it. Like, and no one makes fun of Bill for his stutter, except one time when he's like making the speech at the house and he's like, wow, there was no stutters in that. It's the only yeah, time they ever comment.
They point
on
out
it.
When he doesn't do it.
Yes. I just really appreciate that, because you know, kids can be jerks.
Kids can be jerks. Yeah. So I think it's impressive how brave they are in those bullying situations. But I think it's also kind of reflective of they're very innocent back then still. They don't think like, oh, should I help this person? They're a different race than me. Or like, mm-hmm. this is going to reflect poorly on me in our small town. There's a choice here. We're going to do the right thing.
Yeah, exactly. So I really love that they have such like good hearts already, which I feel like just validates like how much stronger their friendship is. So obviously, like, they all start experiencing it in some different ways. Honestly, I think, like, poor Eddie's was probably, like, well, Eddie's, and I feel like Beverly's was the most horrific for me.
Oh, that was so gross. Just all of the blood.
And it was, like, also even more creepy because, like, her dad couldn't see it, and she's just, like, horrified he's beat her or something. So that must be
right.
Even
she's
more
just
stressful.
Standing. It's a well shot scene too, because she's just standing there drenched in blood. Her room is covered in blood, and her dad walks in and he's just like dumbfounded.
Like, kind of the next moment of their friendship is when, after they've all agreed they've been experiencing it, and they go to the house and Bill makes his big speech to like help him find potentially his brother and also the girl who's gone missing.
Right. Yeah. I always forget about the girl who had gone missing in all of this.
Yeah. Cause she comes back in the second one and she's like, have you seen my shoe?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't get that reference the first time I watched it. I think I was watching some like Easter eggs YouTube video or something, and I'm like, oh, that's whose shoe it was. Totally went over my head.
They get in the house, and then poor Richie's like freaking out because he sees like his missing poster.
Yeah, and at that point Richie was the only one who didn't have any hauntings, right?
Well, now I wonder if he was lying, because when we go back to the when we go into the second movie, we see his flashback with it. So I think he was, because he even says, he's like, what is it, just happening to virgins? Because it's not happening to me. So I think he was actually lying, because his was about him being gay and he was like unsure of it and didn't want anyone to know.
So it's not like he could tell them then.
Yeah. Because we
oh,
see the
that's a really interesting take.
Yeah. Because the flashback is with Henry Bauer's cousin. I think his happens after they go into the house. I don't think his has actually happened then, because he experiences it after they get into a fight and they all separate. Mm-hmm. And he's at the arcade playing with Henry Bauer's cousin and they're like getting along really well. And I don't think he actually has a crush on him. I think he's just lonely. And this is like someone who's being really nice to him during this time and he wants a friend.
That makes sense.
And then after, when he runs out, then he has his experience with it. So I think it happens after the first time they visit. So I get like okay. Why when they go there the first time he's freaking out.
Yeah. Yeah. The others have sort of like braced themselves for it. They're like, okay, I know what happened last time. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm going to sort of expect, as much as you can. But he goes in there and he sees his missing poster and he's like, oh my gosh.
I feel like they go upstairs and
they get
much
separated at some point. Mm-hmm. Which and ties into the whole theme of like, we're stronger together, like,
yeah,
don't get separated.
Mm-hmm. And also like reminding each other to like not give in to the fear. And I feel like this movie also references like how important love is to like the love they have for each other. It was really creepy though when Richie was in the room with like all the dolls under like the sheets and stuff. Don't like those scenes, because something's always going to move.
Yes, you know there's something hidden in there and you're just not seeing it yet.
So I feel like once they all get down into the kitchen and they start fighting it as a team, I feel like that's why it cowers, because he did better when he separates them. But like when they come together as friends and like trust each other and they all beat up on him at once, that's when he starts to lose like his power.
Yeah. And I know, I think in that scene, that's where Bill is like trying to convince them all that it's not real. He's like, mm-hmm. the fear is, or it only has power if you're afraid of it. And then Beverly like spears him through the face. Is it later in chapter one or is it in chapter two where she gives Eddie the spear and says like it kills monsters if you believe it does?
It's number two. I just finished it last night.
Okay, so major foreshadowing then.
It's totally fun. Yeah. Yeah, because I think she, in chapter two, she finds it again and uses it and then finds him. So after this, they obviously get into like the huge fight. And this is when we actually see them like really start to distrust each other. Because like, okay, Eddie, I get it. You could have contracted a million diseases down there, but you most likely didn't. And then Richie's just terrified. He's like, I don't want to fucking die. And like, I feel like that's like him and Bill punch each other. And that's like the first real fight they've ever had.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the kids being afraid is a totally normal reaction.
Yeah.
At this point, it's pretty much all been Bill's like personal quest. He wants to find his brother. He thinks he's still alive. So he's the one kind of like pushing everybody to do this. And so far they've been game and now it's just too much.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was really upsetting when they got in a fight. And I feel like once one person decides they don't want to do it, then it's just kind of like a domino effect for everyone to back out because I get it. It's a fucking scary demon clown that wants to kill you. Once you find it out, you're like, great, I don't have to do this anymore.
Yeah, I wouldn't have gone in the house in the first place. Like,
oh no, absolutely
not. I'm just putting that out there. I would be with Stanley basically being like, no.
Yeah, I would just like stay by my parents at all times and be like, I'm never going to be alone.
Yeah.
And I feel like Beverly was the only one that was like on Bill's side about how they needed to stay together.
Right. I think that kind of makes sense for her character too. Like she's already been through so much traumatic stuff. Like she's practically the adult of the group now. Nothing can really compare to what she goes through in her real life.
I feel like her mom committed suicide because she was like depressed or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then her dad is creepy and rapes her because she looks like her mom. And so she takes his anger out on her. And it was funny because when I watched that with my boyfriend, Carmichael. He did not think that that's what the scene was going to be. And I was like, oh, it was 100% alluding to that. So it was just really interesting how, like, I don't necessarily know if it's because he's a guy, but maybe it was. It's like, we as women, like, we know the fear of, like, when we're potentially about to get raped or something.
Do you mean the original scene with her and her dad?
Mm-hmm. In the first one, yeah.
Yeah, I rewatched the first one with my boyfriend a couple weeks ago, too. And he hadn't seen it yet. And he was, like, getting so weirded out. He's like, wait, what is he doing? Like, what? And I'm like, wait, you don't see where this is going?
Yeah, it's super interesting, like the psychology on that, about like how they just like didn't comprehend. And I was like, oh, the moment, because my boyfriend thought she was being abused. And I was like, a form of abuse, yes. But like the moment she comes in the room and like her dad's like being weird and smelling her hair, I was like, oh, he rapes her.
Yeah.
Like
anytime
100%.
There's a hair sniffing, like, okay, and we know where this
and
is
he's
going.
Like, doesn't want her to have a period and all this creepy stuff. And it's also even more creepy because then like when she's in the pharmacy trying to get tampons, but then she like covers for the boys so they can steal the medical supplies. The creepy pharmacist is like flirting with her. And I'm like, she's a child. What are you doing?
Right. Yeah.
So I love a lot of the social commentary in these films, especially for taking place in the 80s. Like they're pointing out like, you know, sexism and the stigma towards like kids and sexuality, and then also like racism, and then, you know, about Richie being scared that he was gay and stuff. I feel like they did like such a good job of just intertwining everyone's like issues and fears and all that in these movies.
Do you think at any point in the first movie the other losers really knew what was going on with Beverly, or do you think they just kind of took it at face value that like people were making up rumors about her?
I think Bill was maybe distracted by the fact that he thought she was really pretty and he like was attracted to her. I don't think he necessarily maybe doubted her. I think he was just like, no, she's amazing. This can't possibly be true. And I think the other boys were just kind of like, I don't know if it's true, but I don't really care. But I don't think they probably knew what was going on with her and her dad.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, maybe like not even when like they came to help her clean the bathroom. They probably just thought he was like a scary abusive dad or something, but I don't think they knew the extent. Maybe after the scene where she like attacks him and it takes her. So that was weird too, because I thought her dad died because he had blood coming out of his head. But in chapter two, when she goes to visit the place, she's looking for her dad. And I'm like, is that because she forgot? Or did he like get rushed to the hospital and then she stays with her aunt for a little bit? Because then in chapter two, when they're showing the flashbacks to like their underground like house that Ben built for them, she's there. And that's supposed to be the summer after it.
Oh, I didn't realize that scene was the summer after. Oh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally thought her dad died too.
So I don't know if that was like an error, like they changed it or I don't know. It was weird.
Gotcha. Yeah, I totally watched them out of order. I watched the first one most recently.
That's fair. Yeah, because I had seen them both like when they came out. And so this was like a rewatch for me.
Yeah, these were both rewatches too. I loved seeing them in theaters, actually. I normally don't like scary movies in theaters.
Oh, I love seeing scary movies in theaters, which is why it's a bummer we can't do it now. But I feel like I like number two the best.
I liked it too. It did get a little bit long.
It's almost 3 hours. Watch. It's stupidly long. It's like as long as Lord of the Rings. I don't know why it's that long. I'm like, horror movies are supposed to be like an hour and a half at the most. But I would honestly put this up to, because I consider The Conjuring to be like a really well done cinematic horror film. So I would put both of these movies up there because they like deal with so many underlying themes.
Right. It's horror and like a drama.
Mm-hmm. And they actually try to like resolve like character arcs and stuff.
Right. Yeah. And I guess that to me makes for a much better story than just scares. Like if you get to the end of a scary movie and you're like, but wait, what happened with this?
Exactly.
We're in the falling out thing.
Yeah.
Hanging out.
Yeah. They just got in the fight. They've all separated. What is it that brings them back together again? What does it do?
In the time when they're all like fighting and not talking is when Henry Bowers kills his dad.
Yes. And then Beverly gets taken.
Yes.
That's why that's why they have to go.
Yeah. So Beverly kills or doesn't kill her dad and then gets taken by it. And then Bill goes to her house and sees her dad in the bathroom, mm-hmm. dead or knocked out. And then sees the writing on the wall.
That's right.
And so he figures out what happened.
Yeah. And I do like that once he tells the guys Beverly's missing, they don't even question that they have to like go face it again. They're like, we have to do this. And so I like that even though the boys were all kind of attracted to Beverly after they like went swimming in the lake. I think it was just more that they're like, oh, girl's here. But I think they probably knew that like Bill's the one who has a crush on her. And they just like accepted Beverly as their friend versus like, she's not a part of our friend group. Like they're just so good at accepting people into their lives no matter what.
Yeah. They never do that like dumb boy thing. Like no girls allowed in this group. Like,
yes.
We'll no, talk she's about just that in with, the group.
Yeah. We'll talk about that with Stranger Things. They're brats. Yes. So they go to the house so they can save her. And Mike brings the sheep gun.
The really... like bolt gun.
Yeah. Which I get. It's their only weapon, which is, you know, smart. They're again,
it's a pretty good one for kids.
Yeah, exactly. They have nothing else as kids. So they're like, well, I guess we have to do this. And they find the water. They find the well. And I feel really bad for Mikey because almost dies trying to like make sure that they can all get down into the well because Reese's Henry comes. I hate that he killed his dad because his dad was a bully, but I don't think his dad was as bad as him. Like, I understand his dad made him that way, but he didn't completely make him as evil as he was.
Yeah, his dad, like, I don't know if his dad stopped him from doing bad things because he thought they were morally wrong or because he didn't want his son, the police chief's son, to get mm-hmm. caught doing this stuff. Because there's the part where his dad, like, stopped him from shooting the cat.
Yeah.
So I was like, thank you, sir. And then he stopped Seriously. Him from bullying the boys in one scene early on. So,
I think it's that he has to be respectable because he is the chief's son.
Which, I mean, not the best reason, but better than letting your son be a complete monster.
Yeah, which is why like, when Beverly has to, or she doesn't mean to kill her dad, but I feel like hers is much more in self-defense because she's trying to protect herself from getting raped.
Right.
Versus Henry's just like, yeah, your dad's a dick, but he's not. I mean, he could beat him for all I know, but he straight up vindictively, like meditative murder, stabbed him in the neck.
While he's sleeping.
Mm-hmm. Not while he's being attacked, while he was sleeping.
Yeah. And I mean, to some extent, I think that Pennywise's influence because
yeah,
he goes 100%. To the mailbox and like picks the knife up out of the mailbox, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, I think Pennywise manipulates people's worst like desires and instincts, mm-hmm. but it's not like Henry was 100% himself when he did that.
Yeah. And that's why it struggles to manipulate the group because they're so good. They're so pure of heart. He can't get to them.
Yeah. They don't have those bad underlying instincts.
Yeah, exactly.
In the Niebolt house, Mike and Henry get into their fight. and Mike ends up knocking him down the well, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't know how he survived that.
I don't either, because I totally thought he was dead. I was like, okay, there goes another one.
Yeah, he should have died, but he, you know, he comes back. They all go down, and like, I feel so bad for Stanley because he gets separated and his face gets sucked on by it. I would probably kill myself too.
Stan did have a rough time, and I feel like he was alone a lot more throughout this, just like physically, yeah, separated from the group, and also like emotionally. I think he had a lot going on in his personal life too that he wasn't necessarily talking to his friends about, like seemed to have a lot of family tension.
I agree. Yeah, because he was like becoming a man in the Jewish religion. He had all those pressures. And so, yeah, he just had like more going on in his plate. But because this monster demon, it was terrorizing Bill and all his friends, they made that their priority.
Do you know what the significance of the woman from the painting is for Stanley? I never got that.
I think it was just that, like, he feared the way she looked.
Like, so he just didn't like the painting?
Yeah, I think she was just a scary image for him.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting because, like, most of their visions are very connected to their personal lives and what they're afraid of. Like, Eddie's is the leper, and Bev's is sort of connected to her, what she's going through. But Stanley's is always confusing for me. I'm like, why is he afraid of this painting?
Well, it's in his father's office, so maybe like he doesn't like being in his father's office, and like that portrait has always scared him and it makes him think of his dad or something.
Could be.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but yeah, I don't feel like it had anything. I think it was just fear itself, based on what he says in the second movie, which we'll get to. So they go down, they find Beverly, and then I feel bad for Bill because he has to like beat up a monster that looks like his brother, which is probably a lot to do.
Yeah, when he goes like straight up to Georgie and like does the sheep bolt killer or whatever, I'm like, oh, that was a big risk, man.
Yeah, and that was also really like he brave of him too, because he had trust and believe that that was it, which is really hard to do. Especially because none of that should seem real, and it all was real for them.
Yeah, as an adult, I don't think I would have been able to do that. Even like almost positive that it was it and not Georgie, I'd be like, nope.
Yeah, at that point, it's just them working together as a team to disprove that it's not real, he's not scary, and they all just have to work together to break him down. I don't feel like there was any like, oh, I do like how Richie kind of plays the clown, acting as if he doesn't want to be a part of it, listing off all the things he hated that Bill made him do.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that part. That was good.
And then that's when he like gets the good hit on the clown, and then they all start beating him up.
That is a move that shows the depth of their friendship too, that Richie's like, okay, I'm going to do this and I'm going to trust that they're going to know what I'm doing. But yeah, this clown isn't going to figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. He's kind of setting that all up.
They just show their teamwork and get Pennywise to creep off back into his sewer.
And then they have they all become like blood brothers and sisters and cut their hands to make that promise. Oh, and then Beverly and Bill have their first kiss, their bloody kiss, which is so gross.
But their whole relationship is like based on a lie, because she thinks he wrote that little poem on a postcard for her and it was Ben.
Yeah, what is it like? January fires, hair of embers, my heart lies there or something.
Yeah, something like that. Something about her red hair. A really good poem for a 13-year-old boy.
Yeah, I know. She always thought it was Bill. And he's like, what are you talking about? I don't know what that is. We cut to It Chapter 2, which again, they start out with great social commentary where that poor guy gets, who's the part of the gay couple, gets his ass beat and drowned, which is just awful.
That was a really hard scene to watch, like especially at the very beginning of the movie. It's like, geez.
Yeah.
Because I mean, that's more brutal in a way because it's real people doing it, not Pennywise.
Yeah. And I think that's maybe also to show that, I mean, people are just awful in general. But I think for the movie, they were showing that because it still lives there. He is like sort of created like a lot of hate in the city that or the town that they live in. And right. So like, even if, I mean, he was active that night because that guy could have lived if it hadn't eaten him. But I think it shows that just because his presence is there, he's made more people more evil than they should be.
Right. And they showed that in the first movie a little bit too, with like the adults driving by when Henry Bowers is like cutting Ben and stuff, like his influence is over the entire town, adults and all.
And I think that's such a good metaphor for a lot of hate is derived from fear, because as we know, it only has powers if you believe in fear. And so I feel like it's just fear itself is what's ruling the town, which is also really interesting.
Does he see it or does he just see the aftermath?
He hears the reporting on his radio. and like all
like the scanner traffic.
Yeah. And then he like goes down to where the accident happened. And that's when he's like, oh, this is like 100% it.
Yeah. Cause he's the only one who stayed in Derry. He's like the town librarian or something.
Yeah. He lives above it. Yeah. I think he's like a local historian for them or something.
It's interesting to me that Mike ended up being that and not Ben, since in the first one, Ben spent all his time in the library.
Yeah. But then they like decided that he was going to be an architecture because he built like the little fort for them underground, which was random. But
whatever, we'll take it.
Yeah. Mike technically should have been like a farmer because that's what like his... I don't know who that guy... I can't remember if that guy was his uncle or something who was raising him after his parents died.
Yeah, I think it was like a grandpa or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, he's the town historian. He sees what happens and then he calls everyone. And it's really interesting. Like, I still don't fully quite comprehend the whole metaphor about like why they forgot everything. I think they were saying that like maybe when a trauma is so terrible, you just block it out of your life so hard that like you can't remember it. And then because when you do that, you then block out good memories. So you have to take the good with bad in life, I think is what they were trying to make that represent.
Yeah, I agree. And like, I mean, after that summer, with the exception of the next summer, Beverly possibly coming back, it's like they all sort of went their separate ways. They mm-hmm. did not keep in contact as adults. They all have like their separate lonely lives,
yeah,
which is kind of like, and that's just how it goes sometimes, especially in small towns. I feel like mm-hmm. you have those really close friendships early on, but then once you move away, a lot of the time it just dissolves, like no matter how strong it was or how strong it felt when you were in middle school or high school.
Yeah, which is why it's definitely sad, like when we have the flashback of them in the little fort, because Stanley asks, like, do you think we'll all be friends when we're older? And they're like, yeah, of course, why wouldn't we? But I feel like because they chose to forget about the terrible thing that happened to them, they then also forgot about how deep their friendships were.
Right.
Is that a cow?
Yes, that was a cow. My cow got very chatty all of a sudden.
You have a moo-moo?
I have two moo-moos.
You have to send me pictures later.
I will send you pictures of the moo-moos.
I love farm animals. They're the best. And they 100% need to be called by the noise they make. Cluck-clucks, ba-bas, quack-clucks.
Moo-moos. I've got some cluck-clucks.
I love chickens. I held my first chicken like 3 years ago. It was amazing.
Your first chicken 3 years ago? Oh my gosh.
I know. She was so cute. She was, my boyfriend, Carmichael, his aunt's, well, she moved here now, so she... I don't know what happened to them. I'll have to ask her. But she had like seven chickens. They were like her little babies. Aww. And so I got to hold her favorite one, who was like the most sassy one. I don't remember her name, but she was really cute. She was a brown chicken, little brown chicken.
That's excellent.
I think it's really interesting also when we get back to the characters. I feel like because they've forgotten their past so much, they all have married, like they gave these characters very Sigmund Freud issues.
Yes. I love how Eddie married a version of his mom who is played by the same woman who played his mom in the first film.
Oh, is it?
That blew my mind.
I didn't know that. That's so funny and kind of creepy, but it's a different actor, so he was probably unfazed by it.
Yeah. He's like, I don't remember when you were acting like my mom.
It's fine. It's fine.
But yeah, so he's got like this overbearing woman. Beverly obviously, sadly, married an abuser. Mm-hmm. Just like her dad.
Yeah.
I feel like we don't see Bill's wife very much. She's like on the phone with him at one point, right?
No. Bill, his wife, is an actress and he's a writer. And she...
Oh, yeah. She is in that.
Yeah, and so she doesn't like the ending of his book, and he has to write a new ending, and he's like frustrated with her because she just can't like accept it for what it is, and she supports like the studio for wanting to make it different. Yeah.
Tortured artist.
Right.
Let's see. Richie and Mike aren't married. Ben also not lonely. Or I mean not married. He's completely lonely living in his little glass apartment.
I think because he kept the autograph from like his yearbook from Beverly, he still remembers some stuff.
Mm.
And so I think he holds a really big torch for her.
Yeah. And he got hot.
Yeah. And the surprising thing is that actor still looks like Ben. Like all these actors look so much like the kids.
Oh, it's creepy.
It's so stupid how well they do with the casting. Like it's so spot on. Mike kind of lies, calls them all back and says, you know, we have to, it was Bill's blood pact that they made saying like, if he's not dead, we have to come back and kill him. And I liked that obviously because when they met up at the Chinese restaurant and because they got back together, they started to remember everything. it just really showed how close they always still were, and that for their friendship, like, time doesn't mean anything. Like, it's fine if they don't talk for a couple of years or anything. Like, they're still just as bonded and comfortable and fully connected as they were as kids.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of friendship you can only have if you went through something really crazy together, because most of them weren't friends for that long. They met at the beginning of summer and all of this happened over that summer.
Yeah, and so, I think they were friends for like maybe a little bit of junior high and high school, but...
Well, yeah, like the original four were friends, but the other three showed up and they were very new.
Yeah, and it's really interesting how like traumatic events can bond people together that much faster. Like one of my really good friends from my hometown, we've honestly only hung out like a handful of times, but there was a point where she moved to New York City and she didn't know anyone over there. And then I was going through like a really tough time in life. So we would like always talk on the phone to each other. And like that has like cemented our friendship for life. She's like super busy and now she's a mom. So we'll sometimes go for like months or even a year without talking. But like I knew if something terrible could happen, like I would call her and she'd still give me like the time of day and be like super supportive and understanding. But yeah, I feel like you have to have something really big that bonds you.
Yeah, something that just breaks down all the barriers and like insecurities in a friendship. Mm-hmm. So you have nothing to hide basically after that. You've already like seen each other at your worst.
Yeah. And you like also don't take it personal that like you're not always in contact 24/7.
Yeah. So yeah, the Chinese restaurant, they were all having a pretty good time until they found out about Stan's suicide.
Yeah. From it, which was even more horrifying.
Right. So then, I mean, that freaks them out, understandably. Mm-hmm. And Richie and Eddie want out. They don't want to be there.
Yeah. Back to like when they were kids, they're like, nope.
Exactly. They're not shy about saying it, but that's when Beverly tells them that she's had like psychic visions that mm-hmm. if they don't carry out their promise, they're all going to die.
Yeah. And they're like, what the fuck? And then Bill, I think he's only willing to hear what Mike has to say because he was the one who did make the pack. And so he's like, I should at least hear you out.
Right. And I think it's interesting in chapter two, because in the first one, Bill is pushing everybody the whole time. Like it's his personal mission. And now it's Mike who's kind of got the responsibility. I think he's been the one who's been dwelling on this for the past 27 years. And so he's the one who, to the point of lying to them, is trying to get them to carry out their promise.
Yeah. And I think because he's been in Derry and he hasn't been able to forget anything, like it's even stronger for him than to make sure that this gets resolved. Mm-hmm. He has Bill see the vision like he did from like the Native American tribe that he went and visited to like convince him that they can do this. And so then they just have to go back and get everyone on board, which they all decide, and they all have to go like, which is funny. Now they have to separate and find like their personal items.
Yeah, that seems crazy because the whole moral of both parts of the movie are mm-hmm. you know, we're stronger together, don't separate, but then they're like, okay, we all gotta go on our own little quests and find our tokens.
Yeah, Beverly was super scary.
Oh, I was not like, about that.
Yeah, like the crazy naked old lady running around and then attacking her. Yeah, I remember when that trailer first came out, that was like one of the teaser clips. I was like, I'm gonna see it, but no, fuck that, fuck all of it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, goodness. So she's got
your little that cats one. Are so oh chatty.
Gosh. So is this going to be a thing, guys?
It's totally fine. I'll stop getting distracted by it. It was just like they did it like four in a row.
We got like a bird that's hanging out too. Let me see if there's the lighting is going to totally suck in here. But
oh my goodness.
Oh yeah, the cows are now hanging out by the fence with the neighbor cows, so
oh, they're having their daily conversation then.
Yeah, they're going to have cow choir practice or something.
Wait. So Bill's was also pretty traumatizing for him.
Oh, yeah. He goes back to the drain, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one's messed up because he meets a real kid and the kid really gets eaten by Pennywise, right?
Yeah.
I hated that one. That one and the little girl at
the little girl was so sad.
Game or whatever. Ugh, they were so sad. I'm like, I hate the kids aren't supposed to really die in movies.
Yeah. And right before that, they get taken to like the their little like underground house that Ben made for them. And they like reminisce about that. And then they get Stanley's little like
his shower cap. They take it for Stan.
Which I would totally wear that if I was in there. I don't want spiders in my hair.
And I think that was good foreshadowing too to the ending, the final fight scene. Because mm-hmm. it turns into a spider and they've got Stan's shower cap.
Yeah, they do. Richie just, you know, he had to kind of come to terms with the fact that like he's gay.
Ben?
What was his?
He didn't even have to go through anything, right? Because he already had the yearbook page. Like, he had it in his wallet.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And then what did Mike? I don't think Mike had to get anything.
Did Mike already have his to begin with?
I feel like he did, because I don't remember his at all. And then, yeah, so Richie was his token. Okay. Oh, and then Beverly was the postcard that she got from Ben. Yeah, so they get all their items, and then they go back to the house, which, again, is just horrifying.
The greatest house.
It's like, oh, wait, before that, they find out that Henry Bowers is back, because he fucking...
Oh, yeah, he shows up at the hotel.
Yeah, which is funny, because Ben's like, okay, I think I've convinced Richie to stay. Cut to Richie, like, suckos, bye. But then I love that, because he drives by Stanley's old church and he sees that they had a ceremony for him earlier. He, like, realizes he has to be there for his friends. So I thought that was a good way to show why he would come back.
Right. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. And then while that happens, poor Eddie gets stabbed in the face.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Henry goes after Mike at the library, too.
And
yeah, so when they get there, like, Bill is ready to go in alone, basically.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Because he saw the kid die. And he's like, this is all my fault. I want to be the martyr.
Which is, like, very brave of him, but also very stupid, because he's done this before. He knows it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm glad that everyone is like, no, we're doing it with you. We want to do it, and we're not doing it for you. We're doing it for ourselves.
Right.
Which I think is important for him to hear.
And important for them to realize, like, even though Bill has in the past made it seem like this is kind of his fight, they're all in it now. Like, none of them are safe from it. No one in the town is safe from it.
Yeah, they've all been affected by him. So that's also then kind of selfish for Bill to think that it's just about him, because they've all been traumatized by it, especially, like, Beverly out of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they go in and, you know, it has, like, all his shits and giggles with them. And then they finally find their way down to the sewer, which has changed quite a lot, because they have to, like, go through, like, all these extra tunnels to get, and they, like, swim through nasty water. And Beverly gets kidnapped by that, like, nasty, undead grandma leper looking lady. Have you seen Evil Dead?
I have not.
Okay, so you'll have to watch Evil Dead. The new one, like, the remake is really good. The old one is, like, super great and campy. But it is all the It movies, these new ones, they remind me of Evil Dead, because they're so, like, the scares are, like, outrageous, but they're so weird that they're kind of funny. Like, the weird forms that he takes, and obviously because it's a clown, he tries to do, like, weird, funny, like, circusy things.
Right.
But there's just a lot of humor in this movie with a lot of the scares that it tries to do to them, even though they're gross. And so it has, like, that kind of horror campy vibe to it.
I can see that.
Yeah, so it's just something interesting I picked up on as, like, they're all getting tortured trying to find their way down to its, like, main lair.
Yes. They do, like, part of the ritual and get the deadlights.
Deadlights, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they trap him in the jar.
Mm-hmm. But then his balloon starts coming out.
Yes. And then when it pops and Pennywise comes out, he tells them all that, hey, Mike's been lying to you. He crossed out the part on the jar that showed the original natives dying during the ritual.
Yeah, and Mike was like, I just thought it because they didn't believe they could do it, which I think is actually partially true, but he still should have led with, I don't know if this works.
Right. I mean, it's such a hard moral decision, because, like, if you asked me to do something like that and you're like, hey, the people who tried it before died, I'd be like, nope, that's enough warning for me. I'm out. But on the other hand, like, they have to do it. Like, the whole town is in danger.
Oh, so wait, we forgot one pivotal part. So before they go downstairs, because you brought this up in the first part, before they go downstairs, they're attacking, like, this spider thing that has Stanley's face, and it's about to kill Richie, and Eddie's standing in the corner paralyzed, and Bill's like, I need your help, I need your help, and he won't help them because he's so scared. And so then, like, finally, Ben and Beverly, they come down after they were traumatized by it, and Ben stabs the creepy Stanley spider body. And poor Eddie's just like, I'm so sorry. Like, don't be mad at me. I was just scared. I was scared, Bill. And so Bill, like, calms down. And then as they're going down, they're still scared. And he's like, I shouldn't go. I shouldn't go. Like, I'm going to cause problems for you. And that's when Beverly gives him the spear.
Right.
And says, this kills monsters. And he's like, it does. She's like, if you believe it does, then it does. And I feel like that just reiterates the whole power of, like, your mind is so powerful and whatever you believe is what will be true.
Great message, even in real life.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's just such a great moment. And I also just love that he does that, because then it's like they're all running around getting attacked by it. And they have to like go off and hide in separate caverns, which is really funny, because then Eddie and Richie, they're up against like the three doors, like not scary at all, scary, like really scary. They go to the not so scary, and there's like the little Pomeranian. They're like, I fucking know what you are. You think you're fucking cute, but I know your lies. And then they're like, and then they tell him to sit, and he sits, and they're like, oh, that's really cute. Good dog, good dog. And then he turns into like a crazy zombie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love those doors from the first movie, too. It's like they fall for it. They're like, yeah. Oh, we're going to go for this one because you're trying to trick us.
It's very, and it goes through that and relates to like, he would probably see those doors at like a circus. And that's like where it kind of got his embodiment from. I just love that moment. It's so funny. But so then I think it's Richie goes out and tries to get the attention of it. And it's really funny. And he's like, watch me dance, motherfucker. But right when he says that, he gets hit by like the deadlights. Really, like so comical. But then he's dead. Eddie comes in and saves the day. And he says again, he's like, this kills monsters if you believe it does. And then he hits it and like almost kills him. But then because he's so proud, he gets hit by it. Sad.
So sad.
But I feel like story-wise, it makes sense that if someone had to die, it should have been him. Like that was his arc. He had to show that he wasn't afraid of anything anymore.
Right. Because aside from Stanley, Eddie's the one who's the most afraid of it all. Not that how it impacts other characters is a good reason to kill off your characters, but I think his death is particularly sad because Richie, his reaction like almost made me cry watching.
I know.
But also because Beverly was the one who gave him the spear and told him to
use
it.
Go be a hero.
Mm-hmm. So that's just tragic.
So it's really upsetting how Richie like doesn't want to leave. He doesn't want to leave his body. And then as like he realizes that it's still alive, they I think it's Mike that he's like, there's another way to like make someone small. And they just start attacking him with words. And again, it goes back to that whole belief system. If you believe what people tell you, that can like affect you and stuff. And so they just use like all these mean words to break it down and make him become small and not existent.
Mm-hmm. Rip out the heart and crush it.
And then they have to convince Richie he has to leave Eddie there, and he's all sad and doesn't want to.
Yeah, and as they're leaving, like the house completely collapses.
Mm-hmm. Which then you know the demon's dead. If his like home base
dead.
His home base is destroyed, he's dead.
But it does make it really awkward to try to explain later where Eddie's body went. Like who's gonna tell his wife?
Yeah, that's gonna cause a lot of problems. They always ignore that stuff in horror films.
Yes, that is the one loose end that is not tied up here.
Yeah, it's like, are there cops involved? Did you guys commit murder? And then after that, you know, everyone has like sort of their happy ending in the sense that they realize, you know, it's better to remember all the bad stuff in order to have the good stuff. And they get the letter from Stanley's wife, which was really sad, that he's like, you guys might consider this suicide, but he actually did it for them because he knew that he couldn't stand together with them. He couldn't be strong with them because he'd be too scared. And that's what it would want, is to find a weakling. And so that was just like really heartbreaking. Like he knew he couldn't show up, but he had to follow through. So what was the best way? It was like, oh, to kill yourself.
Yeah, it's just like incredibly depressing yet selfless gesture from him for his friends who, as far as I can tell, he hasn't really been in touch with for the past couple of decades.
Yeah, like they
do that. Like Stanley's the real MVP.
He really is. Because it sounds like they like know some things about each other's life. Maybe they've shared a few emails, but otherwise they haven't really stayed in touch. Yeah, that was definitely sad. And I liked how they did voiceovers where different characters read it over. Also, when they come out of like the underground sewer and they're looking into the storefront and they look at their reflections and they see themselves as little kids.
So I like how you can see also the little ways in which Derry is going back to normal and like becoming a better place. Like when Mike sees the old newspapers about his parents' death or whatever, and the headline has been changed to like not call them coke addicts or whatever, basically.
I never noticed that.
Yeah. So the headline on the newspaper changes to be like less an asshole-ish, basically.
Is that the ones that are, like, in the newspaper as he's walking out? Or, it sorry, not be. In the newspaper, sorry, in the trash?
Yeah, it might be it, those ones. And then there's just all those, like, little subtle changes that make it clear that its influence is basically gone from Derry.
Yeah, so I guess, like, my kind of hypothesis about that was true, that because even though he only appeared every 27 years, his essence was still infecting the town.
Yeah, like, he's on like a dormant volcano, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, and then I liked how at the end of it, like, they all seem to, like you said, like, they realize with the good memories comes the bad too, and they kind of accept that, and it seems like they're going to maintain relationships now, especially the two who got married, Ben and Beverly.
Yeah, and I like that, you know, when Mike finally decides to leave Derry, and as he's getting off the phone with Bill, he's like, I love you, man. And so I feel like they're all really bonded. They're going to stay in touch, but maybe not consistently, but they're not going to forget about each other anymore. Like you said, they're bonded for life. And oh, and I also like after they get out of killing it and they all jump into the lake to clean off, and poor Richie is just like crying and they all go up and hug him. It was really sweet. And I liked that he was brave enough to show his sadness in front of his friends.
Right. Because I feel like, I mean, probably because he's hiding so much about his personal life and just everything that's going on with him, I feel like Richie was always the one who was the most closed off emotionally. Mm-hmm. Like, he never wanted anyone to know he was upset or anything. So yeah. I think that was a big development for him.
Yeah, I feel like he really used comedy to deflect how he was actually feeling.
Which he did eventually in that final scene too.
Yeah.
But it was nice. And it was nice that his friends were all there for him.
Crystal and I normally rate the friendships. What would you rate all these friendships on a scale of 1 to 10?
Oh my God. I mean, for the group as a whole, I'd give them like an 8 or a 9. Like, especially the childhood friendships, because it's just so advanced for that age range, like how accepting they are of everybody and how brave they are as a group.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also just really like how loving and accepting they always were. And like, if they did get in fights, it really had to be like a big dire situation. Otherwise, when they bickered, it never really affected them. They never took it personally.
Right. They weren't having petty little fights.
So yeah, I agree. It's very close to a 10.
Those 80s movies, they just have the perfect friendships.
They do. Awesome. Well, that is our take on the friendships for It Chapter 1 and 2. And we will have our next Halloween special out for you all on Stranger Things. So stay tuned for that. And thank you once again for joining us, Hannah.
My pleasure.
Yes, I'm glad I have someone to revel in all the spooky things with for Halloween.
I mean, I'm glad that, I mean, I wish Crystal wasn't afraid of scary stuff because she's totally missing out. But
yeah.
Her aversion to spooky movies is my gain in this situation.
Exactly. Yeah, it still works out for everyone. Cool. All right. So thanks everyone for listening. If you haven't checked out Hannah's podcast, who she co-hosts with Tyler, Between Lewis and Lovecraft, you should definitely go check them out. Follow them on the Instagrams. It'll all be in the description of this episode. And please, once again, if you haven't given us a review on Apple Podcasts, please consider giving us a review. It helps with the algorithm of the podcast so people can find us sooner, or just share us with your friends. Until next time, thank you. Bye.
Bye.
She's my friend because we know what it's like for people to be jealous of us.
It's so nice when you can sit with someone and not have to talk. You and I are a team. Nothing is more important than our friendship.
Thank you for listening to the Best Friends Playbook podcast. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
You can also email us episode suggestions at bestfriendsplaybook@gmail.com. And if you could please leave us a review on iTunes, it helps us greatly to grow our podcast.